are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, did Betsy DeVos even know she had hearings? We will talk to Tashawn Harden, a science teacher at Detroit's Cesar Chavez Academy and vice president of the Michigan Alliance of Charter Teachers and Staff. Charter school teacher on Betsy DeVos. Also on the program as we speak, Tom Price grilled over his insider trading and his desire to destroy our healthcare system. Also on the program, focus on the good, say Trump voters. Obama commutes the sentence of Chelsea Manning and Oscar Lopez Rivera, among others. Genuinely surprising and humane act. On behalf of President Obama. Also, hearings today on EPA would-be Chief Pruitt, U.S. Ambassador would-be Haley, would-be Commerce Secretary Ross. Even still, Trump's cabinet may be empty on the day he's inaugurated. Apparently, they're throwing Chris Christie under the bus for that one. And Third Way is back with a $20 million budget, apparently to take some polls. And I guess presumably to maybe get like an inflatable poll like they did with the kick the can thing. Oh, new Trump advisor being sued for hiring white people to attack black people at his nightclub. And new polling shows that GOP men, Republican men, are the only cohort that believe it's a better time to be a woman than a man.
They are just killing it in every possible way.
All that and more on today's program. You know, another one of those days where you feel like you're drinking from a fire hose, as it were, folks. We've got a lot of sound from Betsy DeVos's hearings yesterday. You know, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I don't know any billionaires unless I know secret billionaires. I guess it's possible.
Don't maybe tell Sam.
Michael could be a secret billionaire.
Don't keep it
and
quiet.
And he's just laying low. Or maybe it's like one of those situations where
it would totally be Matt.
Matt
would be the secret billionaire. Like the guy who's like, I don't eat cereal. I don't have time.
Right. I mean, Matt could be the secret
like,
billionaire.
He'd be like one of those like myths about like the bag lady in Penn Station who right. secretly has like owns islands.
Right. Matt could be a secret billionaire. Michael, I think, I would say that there's probably like a 5% chance that you have like a secret billionaire uncle who left you $1 billion, but in his will, there was some like thing where you have to go and work as a co-host on some type of show or something
that. It's a long haul and it has to be a really annoying host.
That would actually really explain a lot of things. Like, you've got to go be a producer on a show, and you're just like, ugh, I'm just going to go through the motions until I get until I hit my age where I get my $1 billion. I'm just going to make the show better
and more entertaining and deal with the guy's tantrums.
I'm totally out as a secret billionaire.
Yeah. No way. Kelly's not a secret billionaire.
Neither the entitlement.
My point is that I don't know any billionaires, but my guess is they don't particularly appreciate, like, what? You're going to sit me down for 3 whole hours and ask questions of me? F that. And she had that sort of exuding from her thing. She didn't seem to prepare very much. Let's say there's two clips of sound I want to get to before we speak to Ms. Harden. Let me just say this. I don't know if I'm going to agree with everything that our guest has to say. Like, I don't know. Our positions on charters may be somewhat different. I mean, I'm not ideologically anti-charter in and of themselves. I think that there is a limited time and place for charters in our system. I don't know how she feels, frankly, about that. But she's from Detroit. She has unique perspective on what Betsy DeVos has been able to basically buy there in Detroit. And apropos of that, here is Bernie Sanders in the Education Committee yesterday, basically starting out asking Betsy DeVos if she really thinks she has the qualifications to be sitting there and doing this.
Mrs. DeVos, there is a growing fear, I think, in this country that we are moving toward what some would call an oligarchic form of society, where a small number of very, very wealthy billionaires control, to a significant degree, our economic and political life. Would you be so kind as to tell us how much money your family has contributed to the Republican Party over the years?
Senator, first of all, thank you for that question. I was pleased to meet you in your office last week. I wish I could give you that number. I don't know.
I have heard the number was $200 million. Does that sound in the ballpark?
Collectively, between my entire family, that's possible.
Okay. My question is, and I don't mean to be rude.
Nice.
But do you think if you were not a multi-billionaire, if your family has not made hundreds of millions of dollars of contributions to the Republican Party, that you would be sitting here today?
Senator, as a matter of fact, I do think that there would be that possibility. I've worked very hard on behalf of parents and children for the last almost 30 years to be a voice for parents and to voice for students and to empower parents to make decisions on behalf of their children, primarily low-income children.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know how she's done that? What has facilitated her being that voice? Even if I am willing to stipulate that that's what she's been doing, you know how she's done that? By having billions of dollars and giving them to school voucher programs, basically to funnel money into religious schools. And also buying politicians and elections and referendum that brought about the complete destruction of the public school system in Detroit. And we'll talk to an upcoming guest in a few moments about that. But here is Al Franken showing that despite the fact that Betsy DeVos thinks that she would be sitting in that seat even if she wasn't a multi-billionaire, even if she hadn't given hundreds of millions of dollars to Republican Party officials. Here is Al Franken illustrating to us, and I guess her, that she doesn't know one of the, what my understanding is, bedrock debates within education, particularly over the past 12 or 15 years, because we have had these high-stakes testing, which are supposed to measure students' achievement and then use that
as a way of hiring and firing and funding schools. And so it's an important debate as how you measure, what metric you use to determine whether or not a student is learning. And here is Al Franken finding out that Betsy DeVos is not aware of this debate. And I should add, doesn't seem to know the terms.
And this is brings me to the issue of proficiency, which the senator cited, versus growth. And I would like your views on the relative advantage of measuring, doing assessments, and using them to measure proficiency or to measure growth.
Thank you, Senator, for that question. I think if I'm understanding your question correctly around proficiency, I would also correlate it to competency and mastery, so that each student is measured according to the advancement that they're making in each subject area.
Well, that's growth. That's not proficiency. So in other words, the growth they're making is in growth. The proficiency is an arbitrary standard.
If they've reached a level, the proficiency is if they've reached a third grade level for reading, et cetera.
I'm talking about the debate between proficiency and growth, and
yes.
What your thoughts are on them.
Well, I was just asking to clarify then.
Well, this is a subject that has been debated in the education community for years. And I've advocated growth, as the chairman and every member of this committee knows, because with proficiency, teachers ignore the kids at the top, mm-hmm. who are not going to fall below proficiency, and they ignore the kid at the bottom, who no matter what they do will never get to proficiency. So I've been an advocate of growth. But it surprises me that you don't know this issue. And, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a good reason for us to have more questions, because this is a very important subject, education, our kids' education. And I think we're selling our kids short by not being able to have a debate on it. And I didn't know of any rule about this, everyone gets one question and one other senator gets a question. I don't know where that rule comes from.
Well, I'll tell you where it comes from, Senator Franken. It comes from the committee president and the way we treated President Obama's nominees, John King, and the way we treated Arne Duncan, and the way I was treated when I was a secretary.
But
I'm
going to
apply. I'm applying the same rules to them, to Secretary DeVos or who, to Mrs. DeVos.
Well, I think we're selling our kids short by not being able to ask follow-up questions. And I was kind of surprised. Well, I'm not that surprised that you did not know this issue.
I mean, that's pretty damning. She doesn't even know what he's talking about. I mean, she's heard proficiency, but to have a Secretary of Education who comes in without even, I mean, he's not even asking her to agree with his position on that question. She doesn't even realize it's a question. Because really, for Betsy DeVos, the record is clear. And I have the quote here, I think, what it is. This is the problem with what is going on. According to a 2001 interview for The Gathering, is a group focused on advancing Christian faith through philanthropy. She and her husband offered a view of her views. Asked whether Christian schools should continue to rely on philanthropic dollars rather than pushing for taxpayer money through vouchers, Betsy DeVos replied, "There are not enough philanthropic dollars in America to fund what is currently the need in education, versus what is currently being spent every year in education in this country." In other words, the public funding. "Our desire is to confront the culture in ways that will continue to advance God's kingdom." So why should you give a crap about should we measure kids based upon a standard that is set for each specific grade? Or should we measure kids' learning based upon where they were when they entered the grade and where they were when they exited the grade? Growth versus proficiency. There's a debate as to which is better. She's not even aware there's a debate because God apparently didn't mention it to her. All right, we got to take a brief break. We'll come back with Tashun Hardin, a science teacher at Detroit's Cesar Chavez Academy and vice president of the Michigan Alliance of Charter Teachers and Staff. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Tashun Hardin. She's a science teacher at Detroit Cesar Chavez Academy and a vice president of the Michigan Alliance of Charter Teachers and Staff. Welcome to the program, Tashun.
Thank you.
First off, for people who don't know, tell us what the experience or your experience, I guess, professionally is of Betsy DeVos and her influence on Detroit schools.
Well, I think Betsy DeVos actually helped create the unregulated charter landscape in Michigan that for the most part values profit over students. I know for my case, I've seen a lack of services for special education students, schools closing down or students being dismissed from for-profit charter schools after count days in Michigan. And on count day, that's when the number of students in your building determines how much funding you get from the state. I've seen for-profit management companies that prefer to hire inexperienced teachers over long-term subs instead of recruiting and retaining highly qualified teachers. All of those things lead to instability in education for students and teachers.
And you yourself are a charter teacher.
Yes, I am.
So clarify that for people who don't understand. What is the difference between a for-profit charter and a non-profit charter?
So a for-profit charter schools, they're operated by companies. They're businesses that make money off of operating a school. Nonprofit charters are mostly run by educators, but they don't make a profit off of the schools.
And how did Betsy DeVos help, I guess, promulgate the number of charter schools in Detroit?
Well, since she lobbied and she paid for lobbyists to have an unregulated charter sector, it made it so that for-profit charter companies had an incentive to come to Michigan, and especially in Detroit. There are so many ways that they can cut costs, and that actually makes them make more profit because everything is unregulated due to her lobbying legislators.
And what is and tell me about the issue of oversight. So, I mean, explain to people just sort of how this mechanism works. The charter in a sort of a Wild West charter situation like exists in Detroit and Michigan now. You apply for a charter, you get public, funds that were due for public schools, and and then what? There's no accountability. You don't have to report back on how you're spending it. You don't have to. I mean, what is there any controls?
It doesn't seem like there are any. Oftentimes, only the authorizers can close down schools. So authorizers are the colleges that actually help support for-profit charter schools, and they also make a profit for overseeing these schools. So if a school is not making the grade or students are not successful, authorizers can close the schools, but there's not really any mechanisms or any formal mechanisms that makes that necessary.
And is there a mechanism to determine that they're underperforming? I mean, how does that happen?
There is not a mechanism. It's only by state test scores. I know I was on the Detroit Coalition for the Future of Detroit School Children, where we proposed a Detroit Education Commission that would actually come up with those regulations, and every charter school would have to abide by those so that we could see accountability. And there was oversight, and that package was shot down by Betsy DeVos's money to the Michigan Republicans.
And let me ask you this: in terms of, can you explain to us this? During the hearings yesterday, Senator Al Franken asked Betsy DeVos what her opinion was on the debate between measuring students' growth and measuring a student's proficiency. Can you explain to us what that debate is?
Well, that's very important for educators. Oftentimes we are evaluated based on proficiency of different standards. However, we know that many students come at different levels. So we also want to make sure that we look at student growth over time to make sure that teachers are actually being successful and students are learning. So there is a difference based on just the different standards that students must attain to a certain level, as well as their growth from 2 points in time.
Do you have a an opinion on which is a more useful, I guess, metric in which to measure the success of a child's education?
Definitely growth as far as teachers are concerned and students. We want to make sure that students are learning, not just based on one metric. We want to see where they started and where they end up.
I mean, is it important that the person who is the, the national education secretary even be aware of that debate? I mean, that to me, it seems, you know, pretty rudimentary.
I think as an educator, anyone who is in education knows that there's a large debate between growth and proficiency. Because Betsy DeVos doesn't even know the difference, lets me know that she is unqualified for the position.
And what, I mean, from the perspective of someone who works in charters that that are nonprofit, I mean, I guess you guys are still under the same regime where you don't have any more accountability than the for-profit ones do, but you just don't have the same incentive structure, I guess, as those companies that are looking to make money off of education. I mean, what, in a perfect world, what would you like to see?
Well, just to make a correction, I work for a for-profit charter school.
Oh, you do?
And I am still here because I've been there 13 years. I've seen the lack of supports, again, for special education students. I've seen students be put out after count day, and the money stays while the student goes. I've seen high teacher turnover. I've seen the instability in education caused by, again, all those cost-cutting aspects that for-profit management companies for-profit management companies cost.
Okay, let me wait a second. I didn't realize that. So are you are you at all concerned about speaking out in this way? I mean, that there may be some type of backlash on this?
Well, you know, I am vice president of Michigan Alliance of Charter Teachers and Staff. So I not only represent teachers in my for-profit management company, I also represent teachers in other districts that are nonprofit, as well as local charter teachers. So I'm speaking from experience, but I also represent more teachers, and I think that this voice should be heard, especially from an educator.
Is the Michigan Alliance of Charter Teachers and Staff, is that a union of sorts?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I see. And all right, well, good for you. I mean, I appreciate you're willing to take on your employers in that in that context. But will you explain to me this dynamic of the money stays while the students leave? What is that dynamic?
So there are count days where schools receive funding for a number of students, however many are in your school. I've seen that at a lot of charter schools, after that count day, after the money is given to the school, then students are voluntarily withdrawn by their parents if they have disciplinary issues, and they have to leave the school district and go to another district. Now, that other district is forced to take that student. However, the money does not stay with that student, so it's not like the district gets that funding, that the new district, it still remains in the old.
So is there a specific day every year or days every year where it's a count day? So like if I was to look at the enrollment, on September 23rd versus the 25th across the board, I would see a big drop off those days if the 24th is the count day. I mean, I guess this dynamic is on the 24th. The vice principal calls in the parents and says, look, your kid's really just not a good fit here, at the day after the count day, essentially.
Well, it's about a 2-week period, a 2-week window after the count day. So, but there are two count days in Michigan, one in the fall, one midwinter. In the fall, you get the first half of funding. In the midwinter, you get the second half.
How coordinated is that process? I mean, you know, if I'm a company and I know my bottom line is that I can make more profit if I have less students, but funding, you know, if I have X funding for, or I should say, I have funding for X number of students, but I can actually maintain a roll of students at X minus 10. I mean, that's extra money for me as a company. So, I mean, how concerted is that
a program at these schools?
Well, I'm not sure if, well, I'm pretty sure that they think about those numbers. However, around count day, you can even hear on the radio stations, like, make sure your students at school on count day, they're raffling off laptops or iPads or iPods and things like that, because all schools want to make sure that students are
interesting
present.
And well, what is the, broadly speaking, I mean, is there any hope going forward that the Republicans in Michigan are going to require any more oversight of charters?
I think that with the educational landscape, especially in what we see in Detroit, hopefully there is some sort of oversight in the near future.
And what is your sense of vouchers? I would imagine that's that same problem, but times 10, right? Because this money just walks with the students, and there's absolutely, I mean, these are private institutions.
Right. That's public money going to, you know, going for private, into private hands.
And what happens to those public schools?
They're underfunded, and I think that, I feel like that's the intended outcome of Betsy DeVos's education policy. It's to make money for for-profit management companies and private schools at the expense of students and communities, and it's looking like the public schools as well.
Deshaun Hardin, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. She knew the growth versus proficiency thing. Maybe she could tutor Betsy DeVos.
What would be the equivalent of that in another, like, Mr. Tillerson, are you aware of the distinction between...
Nuclear triad? What? Maybe.
No, I mean, how about NATO versus,
yes,
like, Russia's security alliance in the Caucasus. Are you aware of the distinction between those security arrangements? Well, Mr. Chairman, I support security, certainly.
Yeah.
And right. I think if you're referring to security, I'm quite serious about security.
NATO? What is NATO?
I mean, Ben Carson, even he did not have a single, like, well, I don't understand what the actual functioning of that is. Like, he was completely unprepared. But he didn't even have an equivalent of
that
basic lack of, like...
Well, I mean, look, this is why it's not surprising, is because there is no... The whole regime... I mean, here is basically what we have seen. And under Obama's education secretary... It was not significantly better, frankly. They set the stage, right, by creating what seems like a crisis within public education broadly. The real crisis is within schools that are underfunded, but even more so, underfunded relative to the students who are coming in. Every educator will tell you that children coming from low-income families underperform because they have a listening vocabulary deficit of literally of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of words. Nutrition plays a part in this as well. And the way that we finance schools in this country is a real problem. If Betsy DeVos cared about education as much as she cared about attacking public schools, making up for deficits that she perceives in charitable giving to parochial schools so that we can, you know, bring in God's kingdom to our culture, then she would know these basic debates about education. What is really amazing, I mean, contemplate this. She's been operating in this education space, or she thinks she's been operating in this education space for 30 years, according to her. And she's not even aware of this debate. Like, how closed off do you have to be to what's going on? Like, how arrogant, how less interested in what teachers do and say do you have to be not aware of this? I mean, it's like, I've been working on military issues for 30 years. No, I've never spoken to anyone in the military.
I'm eager to do that, Mister.
It was great to meet you in your office, and I am looking forward, if I do have the honor of being named
Secretary of Defense, I would be happy to speak to generals. It's not something I've had the privilege to do before. Maybe she really does think people make money off of selling Amway products. That was what I thought during that hearing.
I think that it's astonishing. I mean, I don't know if it's just the bubble that she's in, or if
it's not just the bubble. She doesn't care. The fact that she's that wealthy allows her to stay in the bubble safely. Like, that's what progresses
right, so
her
it's
along.
It's just arrogance then, because
it's ideology. She doesn't care about education. She wants the public money to go to Christian education.
Right.
And she's doing this for God.
It astonishes me about these people is that they don't even care enough. You could, for her to have been able to answer that question, one of the most prominent arguments in the field that she is going up to for these hearings, she could have hired someone to sit there and talk to her about it for 8 hours for 2 days, and she could have answered every question with complete proficiency.
I don't think it even occurs to her that there's these debates that are going on. I mean, I don't even think that it occurs to her that there are debates at that level.
How is this possible? I mean, this is what I mean by a bubble. It's like, it reminds me, I guess, of, you know, celebrities who say that they're surrounded by yes people and who never hear the word no, which I always want that job. I want to be like, hire me. I'll tell you if you look terrible or if you're just have no idea what you're doing or whatever.
You just lost the job because you don't say you look terrible.
Well, no, before they go out. You know, if everyone tells you you look good and then you get panned. Anyway, the point is, how is nobody telling this person you're going to be embarrassed?
Because she gives her money to people who want the money, and that's what they want. That's basically it. And frankly, it's not like the Republicans in Congress give a crap
about
public education
either. It's not like any of them
either.
Said, hey, you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, and you have a medieval religious agenda. That's
Madam,
a problem.
I'm going to return the tens of thousands of dollars
yeah, exactly.
You've given us, and the entire Republican establishment is going to return the, maybe it's 20 million, maybe, you don't know. I mean, she doesn't even know how much her family is
no.
given. All right, let's go through some of these clips. Here is Elizabeth Warren asking about Betsy DeVos's qualifications, and Al Franken made it quite clear, I think following Warren in the hearing, but made it quite clear that she doesn't know the fundamentals that are being debated in the education space amongst educators. And here Elizabeth Warren says that shows that she also doesn't seem to know about the other part of being education secretary, which is the sort of the financial aspects of the job.
Chairman is the only other party to the so-called precedent of we don't have a second round. I asked my staff to actually pull the record from the hearing we had with King, and you said
I should say, Elizabeth Warren is starting off by basically saying before she gets into questioning, you know, why can't we have multiple questions here? This is absurd.
And Lamar Alexander is saying, well, we didn't need any extra questions for the last three secretaries of education. But Elizabeth Warren makes the point of like, well, did anybody ask for extra questions? Maybe nobody wanted them.
And you said when you called on me, I think we have time for a second round. Senator Warren, you can be the first in the second round. Just turns out I was the only one who stayed and had questions. So I
understood. That's why we had time.
I understood that that precedent meant that anybody who had questions for a second round could stay and ask them. And while we're doing precedents, I also understand that the precedent was that President Obama's nominees that came before this committee had all filled out their ethics forms and that those were available before we had a hearing so that we would have a chance to ask questions about them in public. So I'm a little confused about what precedent means here. Ms. DeVos, many of my Democratic colleagues have pointed out your lack of experience in K-12 public schools. But I'd like to ask you about your qualifications for leading the nation on higher education. The Department of Education is in charge of making sure that the $150 billion that we invest in students each year gets into the right hands and that students have the support they need to be able to pay back their student loans.
Pause it.
The Secretary,
I wonder when Elizabeth Warren says the $150 billion that we spend on education each year, if Betsy DeVos doesn't say, like, I have a couple of billion dollars. Okay, I just wonder if
what they need to be able to pay back their student loans. The Secretary of Education is essentially responsible for managing a $1 trillion student loan bank and distributing $30 billion in Pell Grants to students each year. The financial futures of an entire generation of young people depend on your department getting that right. Now, Mrs. DeVos, do you have any direct experience in running a bank?
Senator, I do not.
Uh-huh. Have you ever managed or overseen a $1 trillion loan program?
I have not.
How about a $1 billion loan program?
I have not.
Okay, so no experience in managing a program like this. How about participating in one? I think it's important for the person who is in charge of our financial aid programs to understand what it's like for students and their families who are struggling to pay for college. Mrs. DeVos, have you ever taken out a student loan from the federal government to help pay for college?
I have not.
Have any of your children had to borrow money in order to go to college?
They have been fortunate not to.
Uh-huh. Have you had any personal experience with a Pell Grant?
Not personal experience, but certainly friends and students with whom I've worked.
So you have no personal experience with college financial aid or management of higher education. Mrs.
Which is also consistent with her experience with public education. She has never been involved with public education, except for, I guess, in trying to make sure that there's no regulations for privately owned and operated charters.
Although, to be fair,
for profit.
To be fair, I do think that she has some, at least, exposure to fraudulent schemes on the consuming public.
Yeah. I mean, just from the wrong end of that.
Yeah.
Here is...
the right end.
Do you have the Maggie Hassan clip? One of the problems with the voucher program and charter schools is that with charter schools, in many instances, and particularly under Betsy DeVos's influence in Detroit, there is no accountability in terms of them having to accept children who have learning challenges. Certainly in private schools, there's no accountability whatsoever, right? The private school can kick out whoever they want. But they still get, through a voucher, if it's a voucher system, they will get public money. If it's a charter school, they get public money. And what that does is two things. One is it obviously drains money from the public school system. Two is it theoretically inflates the success metrics of those other schools and reduces the cost in which they need to achieve those metrics, and then sends the kids back to the public schools without the money. Here is Maggie Hassan, I think, coming to realize that Betsy DeVos is not aware of the Individuals with Disability Education Act, which basically says that in terms of getting federal money, you need to be held to certain standards as to who you accept and how you teach them. And Betsy DeVos seems to think that she doesn't know. She seems to think that it's just up to the states as to whether or not they should impose those requirements for that federal money. And that she doesn't know that there's a federal law about it.
I want to go back to the Individual with Disabilities and Education Act. That's a federal civil rights law. So do you stand by your statement a few minutes ago that it should be up to the states whether to follow it?
The law must be followed. Federal law must be followed where federal dollars are in play.
So were you unaware what I just asked you about the IDEA, that it was a federal law?
I may have confused it.
In other words, I don't just not know about the growth and the proficiency debate. I don't even know about the federal laws that involve education.
I think you'll find.
And I got news for you, folks. The federal law applies, period, to all public schools. I'm not tied to federal dollars.
I think you'll find, Senator, there's a whole range of things across the entire spectrum that I am either completely ill-informed about, going to obfuscate, or genuinely have a terrifying agenda for.
I will choose clerical error as my answer, if that's okay.
I'm going with B, clerical error.
In fact, later in her conversation with Maggie Hassan, as Senator Hassan is talking about the multi-year record of Betsy DeVos sitting as the vice president on the on her mother's foundation, which has given money to focus on the family. And Franken will talk about that. Senator Franken will talk about that in a moment. But here is Betsy DeVos explaining why everybody's under the misconstrued notion based upon multiple years of tax filings, why she might be involved with that.
Quick things, Ms. DeVos. I just wanted to clarify the issue about whether you were on the board of your mother's foundation. I have 990s up through 2013 where you're listed as the vice president and a board and member. So was that just a mistake on your part?
That was a clerical error. I can assure you I have never made decisions on my mother's behalf on her foundation board.
So the listing that you were the vice president of the board is incorrect?
That is incorrect.
Okay, thank you.
What you gonna do about it now?
I got plans for poor kids to be forced to sell vitamins on the street. I think there's great entrepreneurial opportunities in that with them. And if they just think positive, you know, they could overcome being some kid in a wheelchair or something, and they can make millions and live a luxurious lifestyle. Can we focus on the positive, Senator?
And if money ends up in the hands of for-profit companies, to the detriment of our children, clerical error.
Clerical errors. Oopsies.
I mean, really, to be fair to her, I don't think her agenda is to put money in the hands. I don't think her primary agenda is to put money in the hands of for-profit corporations as much as it is to fund religious schools. I think that's her number one agenda. I think number two is the for-profit corporations.
I'm slightly more on the pale-Qaeda end versus the crony capitalist end, Senator. So maybe you should focus your questioning in a different direction. If you want to go from left field with basic competence, you might find some fertile ground there too, because I have no idea what the F I'm talking about.
Well,
by the end of this testimony, you might believe it was a clerical error.
Here is Senator Franken asking Betsy DeVos about conversion therapy, which is part of Focus on the Family. And the foundation that Betsy DeVos, contrary to the foundation's filings, tax filings, that she doesn't, is not involved in, that gave money to Focus on the Family. Let's hear Al Franken.
Ms. DeVos, your family has a long history of supporting anti-LGBT causes, including donating millions of dollars to groups that push conversion therapy, the practice of trying to change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. For example, you and your family have given over $10 million to Focus on the Family, an organization that currently states on its website that, quote, homosexual strugglers can and do change their sexual behavior and identity. Mrs. DeVos, conversion therapy has been widely discredited and rejected for decades by every mainstream medical and mental health organization as neither medically nor ethically appropriate. It has been shown to lead to depression, anxiety, drug use, homelessness, and suicide, particularly in LGBT youth. In fact, many of the leaders and founders of conversion therapy, including both religious ministries and mental health professionals, have not only publicly renounced it, but have issued formal apologies for their work and how harmful it has been to the individuals involved. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that this be included in the record.
It will be.
Mrs. DeVos, do you still believe in conversion therapy?
Senator Franken, I've never believed in that. First of all, let me say I fully embrace equality, and I believe in the innate value of every single human being, and that all students, no matter their age, should be able to attend a school and feel safe and be free of discrimination. So let's start there. And let me just say that your characterization of contributions, I don't think accurately reflects those of my family. I would hope that you wouldn't include other family members beyond my core family.
Well, in terms of throwing numbers around, you said that student debt has increased by 1,000% since
980% in 8 years.
I'm sorry?
980%.
That's just not so. It's increased 118% in the past 8 years.
Well,
so I'm just asking, if you're challenging my figures, I would ask that you get your figures straight about education policy. And that's why we want more questions, because we want to know if this person that we are entrusting, or may entrust to be the Secretary of Education, if she has the breadth and depth of knowledge that we would expect from someone who has that important job. Thank you.
Senator Franken, in my own defense, I did include the number 8 in my figure. So we both had a number that included 8. So do we really need to nitpick?
I get it. You're Jew. You're clever. Fine.
La-di-da.
Is that proficient enough for you, asshole?
Franken is fantastic. Has there been a hearing where Franken's been in where he hasn't been basically?
No, Franken's definitely one of the best people in the Senate at this.
By far. Runs circles around these people.
Yeah.
Here is Tim Kaine, who was about as aggressive as I've ever seen him in anything.
Yeah, this clip actually really annoyed me in a way.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Where was this guy?
Now, Tim Kaine actually introduces a really smart technique here when he can't get Betsy DeVos to answer. But the issue here, of course, is centered around the one in which we just spoke to Tashaun Hardin about, which is how do you hold these private institutions that you would supposedly give public funding through vouchers to, and how do you hold these for-profit charters run by companies, how do you hold them to account
for the public money they're getting in terms of the way they're treating students.
You think the school...
Here we go. And here she's rather evasive on these questions, even if she wants to hold them accountable.
Do you think that schools that receive K-12 schools that receive government funding should meet the same accountability standards, outcome standards?
All schools that receive public funding should be accountable, yes.
Should meet the same accountability standards?
Yes, although you have different accountability standards between traditional public schools and charter schools.
But I'm really interested in this.
Okay,
should everybody be on a level playing field? So public charter or private K-12 schools, if they receive taxpayer funding, they should meet the same accountability standards.
Yes, they should be very transparent with the information, and parents should have that information first and foremost.
And if confirmed, will you insist upon that equal accountability in any K-12 school or educational program that receives federal funding, whether public charter, or private?
I support accountability.
Equal accountability for all schools that receive federal funding.
I support accountability.
Okay, is that a yes or no?
I support accountability.
Do you not want to answer my question?
I support accountability.
Okay, let me ask you this. I think all schools that receive taxpayer funding should be equally accountable. Do you agree with me or not?
Well, they don't. They're not today.
But I think they should. Do you agree with me or not?
Well, no, because...
You don't agree with me. Let me move to my next question. Should all K-12 schools receiving governmental funding be required to meet the requirements of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act?
I think they already are.
Okay, So I'm asking you a should question. Whether they are or not, we'll get into that later. Should all schools that receive taxpayer funding be required to meet the requirements of the Individuals with Disabilities in Education?
I think that is a matter that's best left to the states.
So some states might be good to kids with disabilities, and other states might not be so good, and then what, people could just move around the country if they don't like how their kids are being treated?
I think that's an issue that's best left to the states.
What about the federal requirement? It's a federal law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Let's limit it to federal funding. If schools receive federal funding, should they be required to follow federal law, whether they're public charter, or private?
As the senator referred to...
Just yes or no. I've only got one more question.
Florida program. There's many parents that are very happy with the program there.
Let me state this. I think all schools that receive federal funding, public charter, or private, should be required to meet the conditions of the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act. Do you agree with me or not?
I think that is certainly worth discussion, and I would look forward
to... So you cannot yet agree with me. And finally, should all K-12 schools receiving governmental funding be required to report the same information regarding instances of harassment, discipline, or bullying if they receive federal funding?
I think that federal funding certainly comes with strings attached.
I think all such schools should be required to report equally information about discipline, harassment, or bullying. Do you agree with me or not?
I would look forward to reviewing that provision.
If it was a court, I would say to the court, let the judge instruct the witness to answer the question. It's not a court. You're not under oath, or you're not under a subpoena, but you're trying to win my vote. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
So there she have it. She can't even agree to the same level of accountability in reporting and requiring and addressing things like bullying and discrimination for any school that receives federal funds under the IDEA or Individual Disabilities Education Act. That's pretty stunning. And you know why, right? Because she wants to give federal taxpayer money to Christian schools, which are going to sit there and tell any students that they have allowed to come in who happen to be LGBT, wants to allow those schools to do all sorts of things to these people, to shame them, to convert them, to discriminate against them. So she's going to look forward to discussing that with you later, Senator.
I look forward to pretending many times to care about disabled kids, retarded kids, and then I'm not going to torture gay people over the next several years, Senator.
We will definitely, I'm looking forward to talking about how that may or may not
be something that will may or may not happen.
See, there's some of these questions, like the proficiency one, I just have no idea.
All right. We've got the last one. This isn't necessarily the best.
Which one is this?
This isn't the most relevant, but it's still pretty relevant.
Which one is this?
This is when she was asked, and I'm just trying to make sure I got the piece of paper. Okay, here it is.
Oh, the gun one.
Yes. So Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, obviously rather sensitive to the idea of guns being in schools. The massacre at Newtown, Connecticut, obviously in the forefront of his mind. So he asked what one would imagine would be a fairly straightforward question for the education secretary nominee. Here it is.
One final question. Do you think that guns have any place in or around schools?
Pause it. Do you think that guns have any place in or around schools? This is a slam dunk, folks. I mean, unless you're running for the presidency of the NRA, or to be fair, the vice presidency of the NRA, the secretary of the NRA, this should be a slam dunk for anyone who cares about children. But let's see how Betsy DeVos does.
I think that's best left to locales and states to decide. If the underlying question is...
You can't say definitively today that guns shouldn't be in schools?
Well, I will refer back to Senator Enzi and the school that he was talking about in Wapiti, Wyoming. I think probably there, I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
If President Trump moves forward with his plan to ban gun-free school zones, will you support that proposal?
I will support what the president-elect does, but Senator, if the question is around gun violence and the results of that, please know that I my heart bleeds and is broken for those families that have lost any individual due to gun violence.
I look forward to working with you, but I also look forward to you coming to Connecticut and talking about the role of guns in schools.
Well, if you have any wild boars or perhaps a frothing raccoon here, if you see a raccoon in the day, you know, you may need to have a couple of weapons.
Some of them have rabies. And also, Senator, I would add that if Connecticut was not a state of cucks and that there was a what I would call a Sylvester Stallone scenario, that tragedy might have been avoided.
So this is from Mike.com. DeVos was referring to an anecdote Wyoming Senator Mike Enzi told her in a private meeting earlier in the day about schools with wildlife fences.
Oh, my God.
According to a 2005 Denver Post article, several schools in the vicinity of Cody, Wyoming, which has a rebounding bear population, I'm sure that'll end after we privatize all the land around there and get rid of the restrictions on shooting and hunting, relied on such fences to keep wildlife from wandering onto school grounds. But neither the Post nor the article in Billings Gazette about the fences made any mention of firearms playing a role in the school's anti-bear strategies. Audra Murrow, a teacher at Wyoming's Valley Elementary School in Cody from 2004 to 2006, explained to Mike that no guns were necessary to ward off ursids, and that the fence and bear spray were absolutely sufficient measures on their own. No firearms in our schools, Murrow wrote. We do have bear spray, but that never had a problem, would require using it. Now, let's just assume that Mike Enzi did say, like, we've got to have guns in our one school in Wyoming to fight bears. And Betsy DeVos was like, oh, I'm going to absorb that new information. Maybe she would say, you know, to be honest with you, Senator Murphy, prior to a week ago, I would have said absolutely 100% we should make it absolutely clear cut that you cannot have weapons in schools. But Senator Enzi tells me we may have to have a provision to provide extraordinary circumstances in case of bear attacks at a school.
Actually, this is how it happened. Betsy, Mike Enzi told me a great fucking point about this. You're going to get that pussy Murphy is going to ask you about the guards because wah, 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 Newtown, this is all he can talk about. He's got his panties in a bunch. And you say, bear attacks. You need the fucking guns for the fucking bear attack. Joey No Sock said it. He signed off on Mike Enzi. Betsy, to the moon.
But wait a second. Why stop with bear attacks? If you're in Florida, like, have you seen the
images? It could be a fucking alligator. Can fucking drag the kid out of the school while they're doing gay conversion therapy. We should hang the little homos over a shark tank and say, you stop wanting to date men or you become fucking straight or you go in the shark tank. This is what could happen.
Honestly,
it's bold innovation.
New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona. I mean, you could have snakes.
There's a lot of potential.
There could be
grizzlies.
Snakes.
Could be a fucking rattlesnake.
What about? I gotta imagine in Dakota, like wolverines, wolves, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, a wolverine. Do you know how vicious those things are? No, wolverine is not
real.
Imaginary? Are you kidding?
There's wolves, too.
They're not imaginary when they're ripping your fucking throat off and all of a sudden your teacher doesn't have an AK-47 to protect the children.
Wolverines are vicious.
It'd be mountain lions in North Dakota.
Mountain lions, too. My God.
That's why I carry heat.
To the moon, Betsy. To the moon.
Speaking, I mean, look, I know it's rare. Hold on one second. But God forbid there is some type of alien invasion, and they turn out not to be friendly. You're going to just leave the kids there with zero protection?
Senator, there is a Mars attacks scenario. Not to mention Red Dawn.
Right.
Despite the fact that the bears thing is ridiculous, there are people who would make that argument. But there is.
Well, she just did. Our education secretary.
No, but I mean,
did.
It's not a foregone conclusion that one would say that guns have no place in schools. It is absolutely
a belief that's held by
large amount
but
of
she,
people.
Here's the thing.
That
she's not making that argument. She's
well,
not saying.
I know.
She is afraid.
But you were
to
saying
make,
that unless you're running for the vice presidency of the NRA, absolutely not. There are a lot of people who think that there should be guns
that's
in
right.
schools.
That's true.
And
people who are funded by the NRA.
Well, the only. I've heard a lot of arguments, and I'm absolutely against it. The only reason it makes any sense to me ever.
Soft target.
No, is if it's a rural school and it takes emergency responders so long to get to the place that the administrators and the teachers at the school feel like having one gun at the school might be able to help them in some way. That's the only reasonable argument in any way.
So you take the kids and you say, you stop being bisexual or you'll go into the fucking shark tank and you hang the little fuckers over like that.
And, the
and
shark
then all
escapes.
Of a sudden, the shark, and they can smell the homo, so the sharks are ready. And then they become straight. Future of gay conversion therapy.
And in these rural schools, you're going to designate one person to be the
gym teacher.
The teacher, the
no,
gun
they head? They want the idea is that you would have someone be
security guard
trained. No,
you just have like one random teacher.
Yeah, sometimes.
What if
that's
that
the
one
argument.
Random teacher is not available? No, I'm not saying that there aren't people who would make this argument, but I am saying that that's absurd.
Yeah, I think it's absurd as well.
And that the vast majority of people who will ever be on your TV making that argument will be either directly paid by the NRA, directly paid by the gun lobby, or recipient of funds.
Oh my God!
But she
bears.
Doesn't have.
Where are the bears?
She doesn't even want to. She doesn't even want to say that.
I think you're pretty far removed from the way that people that think like this thing.
I am no people, yes.
NRA people?
Who would make it, not a single one of them is not a member of the NRA.
Oh, absolutely. The NRA is brainwashing a ton of people. But
that's what he just said.
Well, I mean, but people actually believe this. But tons of things are brainwashing tons of people.
I understand. But I know that people actually believe it. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Well, if people also just operate out of fear, as per usual. So
well, I know,
if
but there are also people who school, there are also
they, you
people
know, they might just be like,
who
what
drink if- silver because they think Y2K is coming, and then they turn out their silver. I
would
recommend.
I would
pull up the picture.
It's not,
well, wait, I know, like with guns, like people. My high school, people would have guns in their gun rack in the driving lot or parking lot. So like in those rural schools, it's not like they're being policed anyway.
Ah,
like, I don't know.
A pussy-free zone. Luck comes from the real America. Did you ever say to the gay kids, "Hey, look, there's a fucking grizzly out there." You can vote.
All right, we got to go. We're still in the. We got to go into the fun half of the show.
We've been giving them a teaser.
Freebie Wednesday.
Imagine a guy.
All right, we got to take a break. Go into the fun half of the show. Just a reminder: it is your membership that makes this show possible. When you become a member, this is what happens. You support this program, and then you get an extra, I don't know, 50 minutes, hour. Plus, free of us doing stuff a lot like what we've done today. So go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member today. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Give us a review on iTunes. See you tomorrow or in the fun half.